Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 in Durango, Colorado. Today I have the pleasure of talking to Lynn Hinton about her book, The Beekeeper's Wife, which won the New Mexico Presswoman's number one Zia Award for Best Publication. Lynn is talking to us today from her home in Albuquerque. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Tracy. Good to talk to you today.
Good to talk to you, too. Congratulations on the big win with New Mexico Presswomen.
Thank you. It was such an honor to be selected as the Zia winner this year. So
yes,
Thank you so much for that.
And I really enjoyed reading The Beekeeper's Wife.
Thank you.
It's a little bit different than some of the other books you've written, correct?
I think so. I had one friend who's read all my books said this one seemed more grown up. So,
okay.
I think maybe, yeah, sometimes some of my cake books, Friendship Cake and Christmas Cake and Wedding Cake, even though I think they had some depth to them,
mm-hmm,
they were a little lighter, I think, than this one.
Probably true. Before we go any further, do you want to give our listeners a little synopsis of The Beekeeper's Wife?
I would be happy to. So this is the story about a woman named Emma Troxler, and we meet her when she's sort of struggling through some of the issues in her life. She works as a security installment person, and she's been doing that for a while, and that's not very fulfilling to her. But so there's some conversations about security and what it means to be safe as a part of this story. It's a story about grief. I have worked as a hospice chaplain for many years, and I think this was my first complete story about grief and loss. I have used that theme quite often in my books because I do think grief is a universal theme.
Right.
But this one is primarily about grief.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part that's a very important part of The Beekeeper's Wife is information and about bees,
mm-hmm,
and about beekeeping. So I learned a lot about that. And so that also informs a lot of Emma's story. Her
right.
husband is the beekeeper, but she has sort of taken on his work and learning about bees.
So why bees? Why did you decide to write this about or have the framework of bees?
I heard this old wives' tale that says if the beekeeper dies, someone has to tell the bees or they will swarm away.
Mm.
And I was just fascinated by that story. So I liked then framing the book around beekeeping.
Mm.
I find that part of my writing is I tend to find something that becomes kind of a hook, I guess, for the story. Certainly those cake books was a lot about cooking and baking, and again, it was about community, so those books and about eating together.
Mm-hmm.
So food was a big part of those stories. And then I did a book on the art of arranging flowers. So flowers and the colors and the healing properties of flowers and the role of the florist in a community, that sort of informed that story. So
mm-hmm,
in the same way of going from cooking and writing books about cake and Pie Town to the flower books to now bees, it just just seems a way. Oh, and the last book was about a woman who climbs up a tree and stays there. So the book had a lot to do around birds. So
right.
I think that's a part of the research for me, and then becomes the hook of how do these parts of nature and life kind of speak to the human experience.
I like that Emma has all these different people that she encounters and gets to know, like her boss and like Bus and John,
right.
And these people in her that she works with.
Right. She doesn't have a big group of folks like a lot of my other stories would have more characters,
mm-hmm.
But she does have, I think, a good relationship with her sister,
mm-hmm.
So that relationship informs her, and then certainly the people that she works with, and of course her husband.
Yes, and she married her professor, who was 15 years older than she, so that made them a bit of a unique couple, and I think that may have cut them off from a lot of socializing also.
Absolutely, yeah, that's true.
So we learn, you know, that he's he's an English major. She's an English major, and he was a professor. And then
yes.
Retired, and so she's working and learning all about bees. And it's interesting that Bus, one of her coworkers, is so interested in bees also.
Right, which creates a connection for them, and also allows me as the writer to have a place to give out the information
right.
that I've learned
right.
about bees.
Right.
She gets to teach him because he didn't know much.
It would be a good time, I think, for you to read a little bit from The Beekeeper's Wife.
Okay. I thought I would read something about beekeeping and, again, how it can speak to the human experience. So this is from Emma.
Okay.
I walk the path down to the hives and notice that the morning sun is warming the ground and expect the bees will be tempted to come out. Bees are very clean creatures and will not defecate in their hives. I learned that they can hold on to their waste for days at a time, choosing sickness or even death before the elimination of their waste materials inside their homes. In winters past, Nathan called attention to the marks of droppings outside the hive entrances, evidence of their extreme dedication to keeping tidy living quarters. The bees, Nathan explained, will also remove the bodies of dead sisters, dropping the tiny carcasses some distance from the entrance of the hives, clearly a difficult task since the worker bees are dealing with bodies nearly the same weight as their own. Nathan used this as another example of the bees' tidiness and how eliminating the dead from the hives is an important task as well as a sign of a healthy colony. I remember thinking when he told me about this that it's possible it's more than just about being clean. The action of the bees at the time of death might also speak to their rituals around loss in the colony, but I didn't say anything that day because I knew so little about the bees and even less about grief. Today, there is not much movement around the hives, and I get closer just to make sure the bees are there. I notice the entrances and now see some activity, though I imagine because of the cold, the bees are clustering, metabolizing, and creating heat for themselves, staying warm by being conservative and holding up together. The bees offer us great lessons in community life, Nathan would say as he puffed the smoker a few times, watching the bees leave the hive, so that he could work on the frames or check the supply of honey. They work and live, somehow knowing the survival of the colony is completely dependent on how well they can perform their necessary functions together. No bee can exist in isolation, he would say. And I would think about him, about the few friends he kept close, the one or two colleagues from work or old college roommates he met from time to time. Still, not so many as to call them his colony. His community. I bend down near the entrance for a better view and watch as a few workers slowly emerge from the hive, nosy a bit around me, their intruder, without harm or malice, and then, sensing the cold wind, hurry again inside. I stand up and lift my face east toward the late morning sun, and then glance down to see a dead bee dropped by a worker, I'm sure, rolling across the fine snow.
I love that. And I love that this is set over the ending of winter and the opening of spring. It's so appropriate to what she's going through.
Yeah, it's true. I hadn't thought much about that because all that I knew in learning about bees, you know, is that they're pretty quiet during the winter time. There's not a lot of activity. So I definitely had to have them come alive. So yeah, that certainly meant moving from winter to spring, which of course has all kinds of meanings for us in terms of new life and in terms of change and transformation. So that was helpful. That worked together.
Yeah, that worked really well together. Now, one of your characters is a pastor, Dillard, and I really enjoyed his story. How Emma really rose and helped him in ways, and Bus too, in ways that were above and beyond the call of duty.
Yes, the pastor calls her because he's interested in a security system. Actually, it's not him, but it's the members of his church. But she gets to be the one to come and talk to him about the issues that they're having, sort of learning that he has created the issues by allowing somebody to come into the church that the church members didn't know about.
Right.
So, yes, they strike up a friendship and actually have a past, which she eventually figures out where they have met before, and it's quite significant.
And then we have the widow, who Bus goes above and beyond to help. And I enjoy seeing how they work together. And you really have developed Bus's character by showing us how he works and helps her out.
Yes, thank you. I do think that was a good way to kind of speak to who he is and to his good nature.
Right.
And, you know, that's one of those things that, as a writer, I don't think about before it happens.
Right.
But that certainly is revealing to who he is. Mm-hmm. And I was glad that we could see through that relationship that he's a good guy and developed this relationship with a woman who didn't have any family, and kind of he's become a son to her.
Right.
Yeah, and then they have the issue of the bees swarming at her house, so that's part of why Emma is called back into her life, the widow's, as they had met on the phone before, because Emma is called to help take care of the bees that are swarming.
Yeah, I like the way that you have these different little subplots and stories within stories, because we also have Paul the bookkeeper, who's got his own story and their connections there.
Yes.
And Emma keeps finding that she knows these people from other parts of her life.
I guess that could be also a part of winter to spring, is just this sense of kind of having your eyes opened when you kind of you sleepwalk through a lot of your life, and then suddenly you kind of go, oh yeah, we've met before, we know each other. So that may be also a part of where she is in her life. I was just thinking, as you were talking about each character and the loss that they had experienced, and certainly Bus had broken up with his girlfriend and then moved there, and so he sort of lost his purpose as well as his significant relationship, and then the widow. So I do think that's part of why people's paths have crossed, too, is because they're in perhaps similar places in their life's journey.
Well, and you said at the beginning how so many people have grief in their life, and that you show that in the book. And then as we get to know Emma's sister, we learn about more about her and more about her loss, which was a surprise to Emma, too.
Right, because she just hadn't been in touch enough to realize how much the loss that her sister had experienced affected her. And I think, you know, I think that's often the case that I have witnessed as a hospice chaplain and working with families after a death, is that, you know, people only give you a little bit of time. And then they're kind of like, why aren't you back, you know, at work? And
right.
why are you still sad? And we just, you know, maybe allow people 4 to 6 weeks. And then it's kind of like, we expect them to get back to what we know to be their normal. And
right.
that's just not the case. I remember, in fact, something that someone sent me with a death in my family that became the most meaningful sentence that someone has ever said to me around grief and loss. And she noted in her card that she was praying for me and then added, especially as the coming days bring life that is forever altered.
Oh.
And I love that.
Oh, yes.
Because it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, it's everything has changed in when we lose someone we love. What has become our normal and our routine is completely upended.
Right.
And just to have had that in a card to acknowledge that these coming days are going to be showing that, you know, my life is forever altered because of this loss.
Right.
I thought that's exactly what someone needs to hear
right.
when you've faced the loss. But we, you know, we have short attention spans, and just like the news cycle will change, we expect that people should get on with their lives and move on, as they like to say, and
get over it.
That just doesn't happen.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That is such a part of who we are in a society. I have often thought I miss when people used to wear armbands, you know, black
yes.
armbands to show that they had suffered a loss. And you know, in some societies, you would wear that for a year. And
right.
there's just something, I think, very powerful about having this visual of, okay, I'm dealing with a person who is not whole.
Mm-hmm.
I am having a conversation with a person who's still struggling, and I therefore need to offer them a little more grace. Yeah, it's a shame that we should do that in order to be mindful of how we should be kind regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think especially around grief and loss, we expect people to get on with their lives
right.
after just a few weeks.
Right. And it doesn't work like
yeah.
that. And so you have a degree in ministry, correct?
I do. I have what's called a Master's of Divinity, which is generally the graduate degree that people who are going to be pastors or chaplains go to seminary to attain.
And I think, so that's interesting. So you drew from your own experience then, I'm sure, with the pastor, and then also from your experience with talking to grieving people. Both of those.
Absolutely.
Were...
Yes, they very much have informed my writing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the emotional parts of my writing certainly come from the stories that I have been invited into
mm-hmm.
of people who are facing grief and loss, as well as, you know, all kinds of tragedies.
Right.
So that sense of how people tell those stories affects how I tell my stories.
The thoughts I have when learning that you did this kind of work were that it would really play on you. I mean, it would really tire you out. It would me. And I'm wondering if writing helps to restore some of that.
Hmm. That's a lovely question. I find, I guess, in writing that there's an engagement that I get to have that feels different from the engagement that I have when I'm with people who are sharing their suffering with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the writing does give me an outlet for the emotions I might have been feeling in the midst of maybe those conversations, but have to be more careful with not making what's happening between me and a person about me.
Right.
So, yeah, I think the writing becomes this place where I can then deal with my emotions and having heard the story or witnessed the story. And it's very engaging for me. I did meet a hospice chaplain once who told me she wrote goodbye letters to all of her patients after they died. Oh. And I loved that ritual. I didn't always do it after I met her and started doing it, but I did often write an essay or a piece about the patient that I would share with the rest of the team. Oh. And that did become a way of me being able to say goodbye and me also to honor, you know, this person's life as I got the chance to know them. So, yeah, writing has been a big part of, I guess, my ability to do the work that I love to do.
And you get to know these people at a really vulnerable time of their life.
Absolutely, yes. And I always reminded myself and would remind chaplains that I might train, this is such an honor to be invited into people's homes and into their lives at this point. Because truthfully, I'm not sure I would do it. I mean, as much as I know about hospice teams and how wonderful they are and the work that chaplains do, and I've known some amazing chaplains in my life, I don't know if I'd let them in. I don't know. I might say, you know, I just want this to be about me and my person. And so I don't want more people in my home at this point.
Right.
So I'm always just honored that people would let us in.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, it's absolutely probably the most vulnerable that a person can be.
That's fascinating and difficult work, and I appreciate that you do that. To change subjects a little bit, the beekeeper's wife is set in North Carolina, where you were born, but you now live in the Southwest. Why did you choose to set it in North Carolina?
Well, except for New Mexico and 1 year in Washington State and graduate school in Berkeley, California, I've only lived in North Carolina. So it's harder for me to write in a different location because I have to study a little more about the place.
Right.
So it's when I'm writing about North Carolina, that's usually when I'm lazy about the place because I just know the South. I know what things look like. I know what the streets look like and how the houses are decorated. I know how people talk. I know what they mean, even though they might be saying something different.
Right.
I know the foods that we eat. So it's just, so I guess probably I've not thought of this before, but I probably did this one in North Carolina because I knew I was going to have to be researching about bees and security companies. And I thought that's probably work enough.
Right.
So I think when I do books about New Mexico, and this is my favorite place in the world, I love New Mexico so much more than I loved living in North Carolina. But it's still not mine.
Right.
So I have to be more careful about, you know, about those things I just talked about the foods people eat, about the streets and about the weather. And it just takes me more work to be more careful about writing about any other place than the South and North Carolina, because I know I won't get that stuff wrong. And if someone did challenge me, I would go, well, maybe that wasn't your experience, but I certainly know that that's an experience from North Carolina.
But I know. There you go. So are you going to get bees?
No. In the book, you know, and in my research, I learned that bees are very sensitive, and part of why they sting is that they pick up on a person's energy, and if you're tense or anxious, then you'll get stung, and I don't like to be stung by a bee. And I just know I'm kind of a tense and anxious person, so I don't think it would be. And you know, and I don't want to work that hard again. Like I just said about having to be so careful about place. You know, I think at this point in my life, you kind of go, I'm happy to work hard on some things, but some things I, you know. So, so learning how to be calm enough that I could keep bees feels like too much work.
Too much work. I was surprised that there is so much work in beekeeping. So you did your research on that. Did you get to go out to beehives?
No. I just read my book. I did talk to a beekeeper. I talked to several beekeepers, actually, and just, you know, to get some things down and learn some things. But No, I had intended to, but just never had the time to go out and do that, and felt like the stories that I learned and the good, really good books that I had gave me enough information that I could kind of set the emotional tone
yes.
of having these hives and what was going on with yes. the bees.
You certainly did. I loved that whole frame of that. So now what? Now what is Lynn going to do with writing?
So I am in a new job. I'm the conference director for the New Mexico Conference of Churches,
oh.
which allows me the opportunity to travel and to visit other faith leaders and to do things around social justice, to do things around spiritual retreats and educational opportunities. So it's a very full job.
Yes.
But I also realized by about January, having not written in maybe 6 months, that I was not happy, that I was not waking up happy.
Mm.
And not that speaks to how I am all the time. I also know that writing makes me happy. So I only have one day a week to write. But I have started a new story.
Oh, good.
And that feels really fulfilling to me. So I'm very happy to be working on a new project.
Good, good. I'm glad you are, because I enjoy your writing so much. And
Thank you, Tracy.
A lot of your books that I've read, I really enjoyed. I mean, the ones that I was able to read. And then, of course, The Beekeeper's Wife. I can see why it won the award that it did. So definitely keep up that writing.
Thank you so
mm-hmm.
much.
You said that you were teaching. Is that part of the new job, too?
No, this is something I've been doing since about 2019. There is a facility here staffed and maintained by Bernalillo County,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of a campus. So one part is a crisis unit, and these are for folks who have mostly just gotten out of the hospital and don't quite know where they're going next,
oh.
generally because of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a detox unit, and then there is a 6 to 9 month stay for substance abuse rehabilitation. So I teach journaling in the crisis unit and
oh.
in the substance abuse recovery program, and I love it. I love seeing people writing, some of them for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I love introducing journaling to folks as a tool for good mental and emotional health, and I love, especially in the substance abuse recovery unit, how beautiful these human beings are and
mm-hmm.
how hard they're working to begin and sustain a sober life, and how hard they're working on themselves and taking the mistakes they have made and being accountable for the things they have done. And I love them for wanting to be the best they can be. I'm inspired by them every time we have a class together. So I just was lucky enough to know the person who runs that facility and offered me that opportunity. So that's how that came about.
Well, you have a very rich life.
And you're a very lucky person.
You are. And you're a good writer, too.
Thank you so much, Tracy. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity to be interviewed on your program. I don't get those opportunities very much anymore, and that's how it's easy to then put aside, oh, yeah, I am a writer,
right.
and because I take up these other things that I do, and they're meaningful, and I love them, but that is not how I first think of myself. So having the opportunity to talk to you and you offering me this invitation allows me to be back in touch with the person I most want to be, and that is a creative writer. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for writing The Beekeeper's Wife and your other books, and I look forward to reading more from you and talking with you again.
Thank you. I would love that very much. If you come to Albuquerque, give me a call, and I'll take you out for some good green chili.
I love it. I will certainly do that. Thank you,
okay.
Lynn.
Thank you so much.
And that was Lynn Hinton talking about her new book, the Zia Award-winning The Beekeeper's Wife. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 Durango, Colorado.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.